Go talk to the geniuses that are online.
Recorded well after Championship Sunday, it's time to Belichick your premises. And if you know a friend who could use their premises Belichicked, send them our way. We love doing that. And joining me in the Belichicking of our premises, I wonder how many times I can say the name of the show in the first 30 seconds. My co-host, Daniel T. Richards.
Who will help you Belichick your premises. There you go. Helping you out there with the hosting, co-host and whatnot. Good to be here. Man, what a time to be a Patriots fan. So much joy and happiness. But at the same time, it's that feeling of like, it's like football mortality, right? Which is like, oh, it's great now, but like, it's going away. It's going away at some point. Is this it? Do I have to relish every moment now? I don't know. I'm feeling very Patriots existential.
Well, yeah, it's kind of what I imagine the feeling of being old is like, where it's like, when is the bottom going to drop out on me? And I'm like, I have Alzheimer's and I can't move because of my arthritis. Like, at what point is the bottom going to drop out? My quality of life is just going to go down.
Yeah. Yeah, listeners, bet you didn't expect this really pick-me-up show here.
I know you're bringing it down to start with. I don't know why you did when we have such like a beautiful transition
part of
here.
I'm trying to transition is into relishing the moment. So.
Oh.
Yes.
And relish the moment we did. There's a reason we're recording so late this week. And the reason is, Daniel, you and Midsider Michael went to the divisional game. But I, along with my girlfriend Christine, went to the conference championship game. Woo. That's right, ladies and gentlemen out there in the Midside. I was in Foxborough for that game, for that result. And this is what I'll say to start things off. I've seen many Brady comebacks on television, but I have never seen one live before in the stadium. And it is a much, much, much different experience. At least it was for me. Daniel, you've only seen them on TV, correct? The comebacks?
Yes.
So let me ask you about this one, then. What was it like watching this one on TV with the context of all of the other comebacks? Because something we've talked about this season that I've told you before is, I think there's a little bit of psychology going on here with the Patriots where it's sort of like they don't feel like they have to play till the fourth quarter. And what I mean by that is I don't think it's conscious. But it's just sort of like all they did was keep themselves in the game until the fourth quarter. And then it's like, oh, we have to play now because we have to win the game and we can do this. It's just the idea that if you believe you can come back, you do it a little differently than I think if you don't. And I think ever since the Super Bowl, we talked about this early in the season of Belichick Your Premises. I talked about it. I think ever since the Super Bowl, they've kind of had that. It was definitely in the first month or 2 months of the season we saw it a lot. And I think it's sort of coming back again. So what was it like watching the comeback on TV?
It was even more so than last year's Super Bowl, which might be hard to believe. It felt more so improbable and impossible. I think it's because, as a fan, I spent all of my impossible comeback mojo in last year's Super Bowl. And so I just thought, like, and this is going to teach me, like, how many times can one doubt the great Tom Brady? But I just felt like they can't do it. He can't do it again. Like, they can't do it again, especially against this defense, which has looked outstanding all game, except for that one drive early. And it just felt more improbable than the Super Bowl, which is crazy to me. And then as it's happening, a switch gets flipped, and that switch goes from this can't happen to, oh, of course this is going to happen, which is a crazy emotional roller coaster, to use a trite metaphor. But that's exactly what it is. You go from despair to, like, is this over? Is this last game Tom Brady is going to play as a Patriot, whatever, to, oh, it's Tom Brady. He's still Tom Brady. He's got this. It's fine. And then it was no longer like, I was no, like, even when they stalled on that one drive and had to punt sort of in the middle of their comeback, it was like, oh, it's fine. The defense is now so fired up by Tom Brady that it's fine. So.
Well, when they punted, it was like, well, they didn't really need that one. It's like, we only do what we need now. Like, if it's a sort of like, I can't think of a good metaphor, but it's literally like, if we have a drive where we don't need it, then we just kind of like, we give it, we half ass it. Then we play when we absolutely must do something.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's hard for me because there is an element where I agree to you that it feels like, you know, Tom Brady, the heroin addict, just needs more and more before he can get up for it. But at the same time, something I've pointed out to you and something I've noticed throughout the season is that it feels like teams play the Patriots 150% in the first three quarters and then have nothing left to give them in the fourth. Whereas the Patriots play a very even game. Even if they're not catching on things, they basically stick to their plan. They know what they're going to do. They play it even throughout. And then in the fourth quarter, they have way more energy to give than the other teams. And they dominate them in the fourth quarter.
Well, certainly. And that has a lot to do with age. So when you look at the Falcons and Jaguars, they're both very young teams. And that's why they do that. I mean, that's what young people do, right? They don't pace themselves. They don't see it as a marathon. They see it as a sprint. And, you know, I wanted to talk about this a little later, but I think that completely explains the Vikings playoffs. And I think it explains why they got blown out, right? The Eagles look like world beaters right now. Nick Foles looks like the best quarterback in the postseason right now, because the Vikings spent all their energy to beat the Saints and to get hyped for the Eagles game. So at the end, they had that amazing, miraculous victory against the Saints. Then they, for a whole week, we're like, oh my God, we're going to the Super Bowl. We're going to host the first home Super Bowl ever. And we have such a good defense. We're going to win the game. We're going to win the Super Bowl. Oh my God, blah, blah, blah. And by the time the game came, it all exploded on that first drive where they went down, they scored the touchdown. Everyone's like, all right, the Vikings are for real. But then they couldn't sustain it to the point that they just got ran over by ex-Patriots LeGarrette Blount and Chris Long. I truly believe that's why the Vikings lost. Not just lost, they got blown out.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, and in what a spectacular fashion, you know, it's part of that Vikings curse of a certain sense. But it's like, was it on third downs, they were the best team in the league, allowing only 24% of third downs conversion on average the entire season. And then in this game, they allowed 75% third down conversions. Like, to have that sort of spectacular collapse, I think speaks a lot to the psychology of a team, not necessarily to their talent, but to their mental acuity and their ability to deal with tough situations. They just didn't have it. So,
and I think when you talk about coaching and you talk about Bill Belichick, something that's very, very underappreciated that he does is preparing his teams properly mentally. Now, I don't mean he tells them how to like play situational football and you know, read the opponents properly. We've talked about that. We saw that with Malcolm Butler's game winning interception. That's been talked about to death. But what it hasn't been talked about is the one week at a time thing. People make fun of that, and they make fun of the, you know, we're on to the Chargers, we're on to Cincinnati. They make fun of that. But there's a reason he's doing that. He's teaching these young kids how to modulate their energy properly for the week so they're not doing too much and pace themselves for the season. That's part of the reason it's hard to repeat, because how do you pace yourself to have two Super Bowl seasons? And that's part of what's going on here, and part of why Brady can succeed at the level he's succeeding at his age is because he's learned how to pace himself on a season, and he hands that down to the younger players. I mean, if you look at the leaders on this team, they've been around since, you know, Gronk, Gostkowski, McCourty. They've been around since the second Giants Super Bowl. All of them have learned to pace themselves through a season. Whereas you look at a Jaguars team, you look at the Vikings, you look at even the Steelers. Besides Roethlisberger, nobody's really been around on that team for a while. They don't know how to pace themselves for a season. We saw that with the Steelers losing to the Jaguars because they couldn't focus on one game. They were focused on two. That's what Belichick's really doing. Even during the season when he's saying 1 week at a time, he's really preparing them for playoff football in September.
Yeah. Not only 1 week at a time, that is totally true, but talking about pacing on the individual level, the first drive where the Patriots marched down to score late, it was the same. That's where I started to have the switch because it had a similar feeling to the Super Bowl. Where do you remember the drive where he was taking for fucking ever to go down the field, and everyone is screaming like, "You hurry up offense, you have to go. There's no time," and he's just methodically, slowly walking up to the line, changing the play, looking at the defense, and the whole thing was, I know how much time it takes. Like, he's a master of the time. This is him saying, like, I'm a master of timing here. And what's more important is executing every play perfectly, giving us this opportunity and scoring at the end. That is more important psychologically and pacing-wise than it is to hurry up down the field and potentially not execute how we should be executing. So that was masterful to watch, yeah. Especially the third and 18 conversion.
Like, yes.
My God. Yes. Clutch. Tom Thumb Brady. Clutch.
Yeah, and what you're talking about is really, really important. If you remember, McDaniels and Brady said, let's just get the first score first. It even might have, I think it might have just been McDaniels who said that. Let's just get one.
Yeah.
Get one. You can't worry. I mean, that's literally not even the next week or this week. It's worrying about the next play. Just play this play the best you can. And they learn how to pace themselves that way. You know, we're down 28-3. Or we're down by, what were we down by, 10 or 11 in the fourth quarter?
10, I think, yeah.
10. Down by 10 in the fourth quarter. Well, let's not worry about the 10. Let's not worry about the fact that we're down by 25. Let's get one score and the rest will come. And that does two things. One, it solidifies to your own team, okay, we can do this. But also, and this is something I turned to Christine in the middle of the game, in the middle of the fourth quarter, and I said to her, and I think it not only has this effect on the players of the other team, but not the fans of the other team, but the players, where I went to her, I go, if you're a Jaguars fan, are you shitting your pants right now?
Yeah, totally.
And I imagine it's the same thing with the players. Like, you've seen Tom Brady do this how many times? You saw him do it to the Falcons?
Yeah.
And I do believe a little bit of the mystique helps the comeback. Because they sort of are on the defense going through the motion a little bit. It's not like, oh, this is somebody we can stop. If you believe the other opponent is unstoppable, you're not going to give your best effort.
Yeah.
Subconsciously.
Absolutely. It was an incredible thing. Oh, the Seahawks. Sorry, I was trying to think of the other one. It's the Seahawks in that Super Bowl. Coming back from, at that time, the largest deficit in Super Bowl history. Quaint now. And methodically just walking down the field and doing his job. But that's one of the other things is, like, it's just poor coaching on the Jaguars' part. It's like you can't do what they did and beat Tom Brady, which is get up 10 points and then basically hand the ball to Leonard Fournette three times every drive. You can't do it.
Well,
you just can't. Now, in the last drive, right, they tried to give it to Bortles, and he's Blake Bortles, and he played the game of his life, and it wasn't good enough. But, like, before that, when they were still up, you just can't hand the ball to Fournette three times. Like, it's just not going to work, ever.
Right, and somebody can mark this down and cut this out as a drop somewhere on some show otherwise. But this is why Manning gave Brady fits and gave the Patriots fits, because he always kept his foot on the gas. They always put the pedal to the metal, and that's why. If you look at, like, what was it, the AFC Championship game where the Patriots were up huge at halftime and the Colts came back and won? That's because the Colts weren't afraid to do that. The 4th-and-2 play happened because Belichick knows when you're playing these kind of teams in these games, you have to keep doing that. Other teams don't have that understanding of the way you have to play certain opponents.
Right. Have to keep the gas on with the Patriots. There is no prevent defense against the Patriots. It's not possible. So don't do it. Are you hearing me, Eagles? Are you hearing me, Eagles?
I hope they're not hearing you.
I think they are. You know, I'll give credit to the Eagles coach. I think he turned their offense up to 11 in that game and decided, you know what, Nick Foles has to prove that he can do this not only to the team, but to himself. And they kept going on offense, and that was a sight to see. So if the Nick Foles of the NFC Championship game shows up, it seems to me it's going to be a game. And if the Nick Foles of every week before that shows up, I don't think it's going to be a game. But
well, I have an opinion on that. I will save that for the Super Bowl week because we have a bye week here. So we're going to need some material for next episode. So that will be a discussion. I do think that's an important point. I do think I agree that that's the key to the game. But I have an opinion on that, and there is a lot to discuss with Patriots Super Bowl history and all of that kind of stuff. And I don't just mean the games. I mean there's some interesting statistics here to look at.
Yes.
But I want to talk about a couple of things first before we do that to put sort of close the book on this week. The first thing is what you described as your experience. Just say it quickly one more time, like give like 1 to 2 sentences your experience watching the game.
Going from sort of unending despair to a light switch of certainty. Is that what you mean?
Take that. Yes. Take that and multiply it by 66,000. And that is what it was like to be in the stadium. And now imagine my perspective, as I'm always sort of like the observer who I'm not quite in tune with everyone else. Because I think this expectation that people had that, oh, we're going to win. It's Brady. Of course we're going to win. Like after the game, like some guy was running around going, woo, it's amazing. Super Bowl bound. I go, unbelievable, isn't it? And he goes, no, I completely believe it. It's Brady. And it's like when you get to the point that you just accept this as normal, I think you've lost touch with reality. So I get why people like have a little bit of a problem with Patriots fans because that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But we're there, right? And I'm standing there, and it's midway through the fourth quarter, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, this is happening. And Kraft was right when he said it's the loudest he's ever heard Gillette. It's the loudest I've ever heard Gillette, the loudest I've ever heard the fans. And do you remember, Daniel, last year at the AFC Championship when everyone sang Bon Jovi?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Living on a Prayer? Is that what it was?
Yes. Yes. Do you remember that?
Yeah, totally.
Well, they did that again, except we were down 2 scores and they did it after the first score. So everyone's singing, we're halfway there, right? And the lyrics are also, you know, you got to hold on to what you got. It doesn't matter if you make it or not. We've got each other and that's enough. Like, that was literally the feeling in the stadium. It's like, we've got Tom Brady. It doesn't matter if we win this game. We're living on a prayer. Like, that's what it's like. You know, this whole idea of like, most other teams would not win this. It's like you're praying and you're saying, please, can we win this? And you know what? Ultimately, we don't care because, as I said, the last Super Bowl was kind of like the final stamp and everything after is sort of like the curtain call, the epilogue. And that was what the feeling was like. It was like, we're enjoying this because you know what? If we win this, it's spectacular and it's amazing and we believe we're going to win this. But if we don't, it's sort of like, okay, that's fine. We have a great history anyway. And for me, the one word I would use to sum up the experience of watching it is surreal.
Yeah.
It was like, this is happening and I'm here and I'm part of it because with my yelling and my screaming, I'm egging the team on and they know that and they're feeling it. And it was the same thing. Remember when Edelman made the catch in the Super Bowl? I was like, okay, they're going to win. Well, when Amendola laid out and he was horizontal with the field and he somehow made that catch with the ball like a foot or half a foot off the ground, I was like, they're going to win. That's when I knew they were going to win. And it was surreal seeing it in real life. It wasn't like on TV where I was like, holy crap, that's insane. Like on TV, I was more excited because I was like, yeah. But when you're there and you're feeling it, like, there's just this atmosphere where you're feeling it happening. And it literally, it literally, after the game was over, it brought me to my knees. Like, I literally, because there, you know, there's the guardrail in front of the seats we have. And while they're rolling out the AFC Championship stage and they're setting off the fireworks and the confetti's dropping and everything, I literally went to my knees and leaned on that railing and just watched everything. And I'm not even going to lie. Like, I cried. Not in the same way I cried at the shock of Malcolm Butler intercepting the football. And it was just like the relief of Deflategate was gone. And it was just like all this relief. But it was being overpowered by something that shouldn't happen and shouldn't be commonplace, but has become commonplace in Gillette Stadium. And I just fell to my knees. I didn't even fall. I just slowly descended to my knees and took it all in. It's something I'm glad I experienced live, because if I had never seen Tom Brady do that live, I don't think I would have ever appreciated it in the way it deserves to be appreciated.
Yeah, totally. I think one of the things that you're expressing that will come off to many, unfortunately, as schlocky, is the difference in experience that you get when you're at the game is that there's a lack of cynicism. The TV element of it, especially with commentators, which is why I've started turning them off, is it's highly cynical. It's a highly cynical experience, and part of that is, you know, when Amendola makes that catch, I mean, I wasn't there, but I remember similar catches in last year's AFC Championship game. You experience the emotion of that play immediately. Like, it is what, even if it gets overturned later, the experience you have at it immediately is pure joy. When you're watching it on television, and my experience of Amendola's catch was, Where his feet in? Show me the angle where his feet are in. And it's almost anxiety driven first, because the television remediation is cynical. It's a cynical lens, because we're looking for different angles to double check. We're going to slow-mo. We're getting the up-in-person view. Whereas the actual game is the immediate experience of the actual thing, and thus it lacks cynicism.
It's interesting you say that, because that was actually something I had thought about. The fact that there aren't commentators there all game telling me the narrative with which I'm supposed to watch the game, I was thinking about that. I'm composing the narrative in my own mind as I go. I simply have what I am seeing and what I am feeling, and my mind has to process that on its own. There's no one else in there telling me how to process it. Now, there is all the past narratives from the past commentary, but someone like you and I, we're removed from that enough because we're very critical of that. But I did think about that. And specifically when you talk about the Amendola catch in the back of the end zone, my experience was completely different. It was just immediately, he caught that. His toes are in. Like, I knew he was in. I watched it. And maybe that's because of where the seats are, right? The seats are in the third deck, so you literally see the whole field and you see everything that's going on. So it wasn't were his feet in. It was just, no, his feet are in. Like, it was just all in the one moment my brain processed. He caught the ball, his feet are in. And that's the way it's supposed to be when you're watching the game like that. It's not supposed to be like you said on TV where we're looking at it from the same angles. That's why with the fumble call, I was very critical of that. Because to me, it looked like, okay, he's down. And then all of a sudden, the guy has the ball and he's trying to run for a touchdown. And it didn't compute in that way. And if you watch it, it looks like he's holding on to it by the tip, and then it comes out after he falls down. So the call could have really gone either way, but I'm saying in the stadium, to me, it looked very much like it wasn't a fumble if you just watch the way it happened, where he runs, and then all of a sudden he's down, and then all of a sudden the other guy has the ball. It seemed more bing, bang, boom like that, where the replay made it seem a lot smoother.
Yes, well, that seems to be an example of something that counters the growing narrative of the week about the Patriots, which is we can't go a week without the Patriots having some aid to their victory, right, Justin? Whether it's stealing playbooks or deflating footballs, or in this case, the referees only calling one penalty on the Patriots for 10 yards versus I don't know, however many, for 90-something yards on the Jaguars. So, but that this particular play would seem counter to that narrative. Is it perhaps, do you think, because this narrative is stupid?
This narrative, I mean, do you really want me to rant right now? Because that's how much I fucking hate this narrative. Look, there's that fucking meme online, right, where they showed Brady with his rings, and they point to each of them, and they say why he didn't deserve them, right? They say the Tuck rule, they say Spygate, they say Adam Vinatieri, they say Deflategate. I don't even know, what do they say for the fifth one? Do they make anything up for that?
Oh, I don't know.
They say Falcons play calling, I think. Right, they even say that with the Seattle one, right? Oh, well, they should have ran the ball, and they chose to throw it. And now everyone's decided this season the refs are choosing the Patriots to be Super Bowl champions.
Yes.
We can't in this country, we can't in this culture have winners anymore. There has to be some reason they win that they don't deserve to win, because everybody has this idea that it's impossible to earn winning. That whoever wins, it's because of some external factor that has nothing to do with them. And what that does is that excuses everyone where, oh, I didn't lose because I wasn't good enough. I lost just because I didn't have this unfair thing in my advantage. So this year, these people have constructed this fantastical, delusional narrative that the refs are helping the Patriots. The league wants the Patriots to win. Oh, wait, you mean the league that suspended Tom Brady for 4 games with no evidence? That league?
Yeah, the league that perpetuated the Spygate nonsense, which people will think that makes me a total homer, quote-unquote, but if you do any amount of research into Spygate, it's also complete bollocks, to use a word.
But that's the point. This ref thing should get people to look backwards at Deflategate and Spygate and say, why did those things catch on? Well, they caught on because people need excuses. And they were easy excuses, right? The whole idea of, well, where there's smoke, there's fire. Fuck you, the fire can be lit by assholes like you. And this is the same example. It's more like crazy people on the outskirts. More normal people are saying it's not the refs. But this is an example of it. Where if you're saying they have to create this narrative, well, then look at the narratives in the past and see why they're coming up with this. Look, we're not saying there haven't been sketchy calls. We talked about that with the Heath Miller. Was it Heath Miller? Jesse James. Sorry, Jesse James is the tight end now for the Steelers. The Jesse James non-touchdown touchdown. I know, I'm so old. I'm so old that Jesse James makes me think of a old Western cowboy when I hear that name. I'm like, how did a cowboy end up on the Steelers? Zing. That's a really bad joke. But yeah, no, we talked about that, you know, in the Buffalo one as well. We understand that. But that happens with everyone. You know what you people don't fucking talk about? When Denver won the Super Bowl 2 seasons ago and all the magic penalties against Gronk occurred in the game in December in Denver when we were winning, and then suddenly we lost that game out of nowhere. We were dominating the whole time, and then what did we do? We lost by a 2-point conversion in Denver in the AFC Championship game, and then they blew out Carolina. Do you ever think without those fucking mystery calls against Gronk, we would have won the Super Bowl that season? No, but nobody ever talks about that because, oh, the refs favor us now. Now the refs are in our back pocket.
Yeah, it's not really worth, you know, empirically debunking this nonsense, because anyone who would be convinced by an empirical debunking is not saying it in the first place, because they're not retarded. But the sort of, just basically to point out things like, if you go up, the stats on penalties are widely available. Go look them up. I did. It's fun. It's not. But this was my favorite stat of all of them. So the Pats are just under the average number of penalties against them this season with 100. The average is 109. this is my favorite, especially because there's a lot of home field advantage talk about the referees, which I found hysterical. So of their 100 penalties, exactly 50 have been called at home and 50 have been called away. That was my favorite stat about the Patriots. But go look at those.
And how many of those are on Gronk for offensive pass interference for being big?
That's right. And then the other sort of correlation that was really funny to me is where the Pats do lead certain categories. So like yardage, like benefiting yardage, basically from penalties against teams they're playing. They are first. But who's second? Jacksonville. Fucking hilarious.
I'm rolling my eyes right now. Yes. And not only that, I'm going to add to that. Here's a stat you probably didn't even know. I might have said this to you before, but I don't remember if I did. The refs are so, the NFL is so in the Patriots' pocket that they assign the ref that the Patriots have a losing record against to the game. They had like, what, a 2-3 record against this guy going in, or was it 2-4 going in?
I don't remember. Anyway, they had a losing record, yes.
It's a losing record. So, yeah, they really want us to win so badly that they assign the ref we have a losing record who maybe calls stuff against us. Yeah, that makes sense. Or maybe they did the opposite, where they want you people to shut the fuck up, so they assign that ref, so if the Patriots do win, people can see that it's fine. Look, these fucking penalties, like, I'm seeing people saying the penalties aren't penalties. I'm going to say the same thing I said with, like, the Danny Amendola touchdown. Those PIs on Brandon Cooks were obvious PIs. I mean, one, he rode him out of bounds. You can't just fucking ride a guy out of bounds. And the second one, like, you see the ball go in the air, and then you see the Jaguars player hit Cooks while the ball's in the air. Like, it doesn't get more obvious than that.
Yeah. It's a nonsense narrative. For the most part, you know, we criticize the referees. I think they have a lot of room to grow. There were some calls that the Patriots got this year that were objectively wrong calls in their favor. But same with calls against the Patriots that were objectively wrong. It happens at every single team. We talk about it. The refs have room to grow. Overall, the refs are about as fair as you would expect. And additionally, the whole conspiracy theory thing is just nonsense. There are too many eyes on a game, too many cameras on a game. It would be nearly impossible to rig a game. Get over it. Your team lost. The Patriots are better than you. Moving on.
And the other thing, as we saw with the catch rule this year, is there are stupid rules. And sometimes those stupid rules benefit teams. And, you know, going back to the beginning of the dynasty, the beginning of the 18 years, the Tuck rule was a stupid fucking rule. But it was called properly based upon the rule in the book. So what'd they do? They got rid of it. So if you're going to sit here and say, oh, well, the Tuck rule benefited them. Well, it was there for everyone. It was a stupid rule and they changed it. So what are we supposed to do? Not play with the rules that are in the game?
Right. Exactly.
Just pisses me off.
It's nonsense. Luckily, it won't matter because the more hatred there is, the better the Patriots do. So please, haters. go ahead, bring it on. But look, to sort of build off a little bit about what you were talking about earlier, very quickly, I know we're at the end of the show here, it shouldn't matter that they're the Patriots. It shouldn't matter that they're Tom Brady. What this team is achieving, what this player is achieving, what this coach is achieving is unprecedented in this sport's history. And you are alive to see it, listener. You are alive to see something that likely will never happen again in the history of this sport. Whether or not you are a Chicago Bulls fan, being alive to watch Michael Jordan play and to watch the Bulls play and to win 6 championships was an incredible experience that likely will never be repeated in the history of that sport either. It doesn't matter if you were a fan. It's an incredible thing to watch, and you should relish that now. Even if you don't have to root for them. I'm not saying whatever team you love, you have to root for the Patriots. What I'm saying is that it makes no sense. It is contrary to the values of your life and to the values of life per se to hate greatness for greatness's sake. Don't do that. Don't make up excuses. It only makes your life worse.
Correct. And the idea that they don't deserve to be there anymore because other people deserve a chance is antithetical to life and to your life. It should be whoever earns it. And if people are earning it this much, something that may not be witnessed again in the history of sports is what you're witnessing. So appreciate it. Because if you don't learn to appreciate it, that speaks to your weakness of your character and your psychology. So whatever, man, if that's what you want to do. And to sum up, I will say the best quote I've seen so far about the Super Bowl is similar to what you're saying about hate them more and they'll win more. I saw a quote that said, "Tell me the amount that you're offended, and I'll tell you how much the Patriots will win the Super Bowl by."
Zing.
I thought that summed it up perfectly.
Yes. That's
lovely. All right. Well, if people want to, like, really, like, lay into us and call us, like, elitist assholes and, like, big-time homers, where can they reach you on social media?
You can reach me at GoToHell No, it's at Daniel T. Richards, or on Instagram at Daniel T. Richards, or on Facebook. You can just search for Daniel T. Richards. It turns out I'm pretty easy to find.
I am similarly easy to find. I am on all of the social media under the Midside. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. Also, if you want to hear episodes of our flagship show, Welcome to the Midside, you can go to themidside.com/podcast. Or if you're listening to this show on iTunes, it's already in the feed. Just scroll down and you'll see older episodes from last season. The new season is coming soon. Thanks for checking in with us for this week. For now, we're on to Media Week.
My face, your face, instant face, go talk to whoever you want that does that stuff.